From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hi, I'm Arden Marine from Insatiable and the Will You Accept This Rose podcast.
And I'm Julianne Robinson, an Emmy-nominated director of Bridgerton.
And we are the hosts of Lady of the Road, a funny and inspiring podcast where we have conversations with influential women about their lives and we get self-help advice.
Because we are always looking to improve ourselves.
True story. We talk about money, health, relationships, you name it, from inspiring women like Joan Jett, Nicole Byer, Lauren Lapkus, Retta, and more.
Listen and subscribe to Lady of the Road on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Conquer your New Year's resolutions with the Before Breakfast podcast. In each bite-sized daily episode, you'll learn how to make the most of your time with practical tools to help you feel less busy and get more done. Listen to Before Breakfast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, this is Christina Hutchinson.
And Corinne Fisher. We're thrilled to announce that our show, Guys We F*** the Anti-Slut-Shaming Podcast, is returning to wide release.
That's right. Every Friday, we talk to one of our favorite comedians or an expert in the field of sexuality, love, and relationships. To hear what all the f***s are about, subscribe now.
And listen to the Luminary original podcast, Guys We F***, starting January 21st on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is David Denman, and I played Roy Anderson on The Office.
Well, hello, friends. Welcome once again to another episode of The Office Deep Dive. I am your host, Brian Baumgartner, and today I am so excited about this. Our guest today, as you know, played, well, I'd call him iconic. An iconic character on The Office. He dated everyone's favorite receptionist. He vandalized a bar and he threw some punches. Or he would have, if not for Dwight's pepper spray. If you catch my meaning, you know I am bringing on the incredible David Denman today, aka Roy Anderson. Now, David currently is on one of my favorite shows, HBO's Mayor of Easttown, but before that, he spent many years playing an ordinary guy just working in a warehouse. He really has a unique perspective on The Office, right? Because his character was on and off the show for all 9 years, and he went through quite a journey during that time. Today, we're going to talk about that, as well as Roy's standout moments, his wedding, the booze cruise, and much, much more. We're also going to bring up some big questions for David. Was Roy a sympathetic character? Do we think he cheated on Pam? And most importantly, what was in his trash bag from the pilot? It's a good question, right? So join me today in welcoming half of Pam and Roy, or Poi, as no one has called them ever, David Denman.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every moment left over from the night before.
David!
What's happening, brother?
What is going on? Oh my God, it's been so long. How are you?
I'm good. And we were just trying to figure out, last time I saw you, I think, was at your wedding, and I don't remember when that was. Was that 10 years ago?
Oh my gosh, that is just so, that's just disgustingly too long.
It's all right.
Oh my God. All right. Well, we're going to get into a lot, but I want to start back at the beginning. You're from California, but you end up getting accepted and go to Juilliard, which basically what that means to me is you knew what you wanted to do pretty early. Is that true?
100%. Yeah. No, I knew I wanted to be an actor since I was a kid. I remember I went and saw that movie, The Black Stallion, when I was a kid, and I must have been six when it came out, I think. And my dad took me. I never forget it. And I remember going, I want to be that kid. And it was the ongoing joke in the family, like, David, you're not going to be a jockey. It's just not going to happen. And then shortly after that, E.T. came out, and I was like, I want to do what that guy's doing. And my family was just like, what? We have no idea what to do with you. And so, I knew from a young age, all these pictures of me dressing up in costumes, running around and, you know, playing pretend.
Me too. Did you have any family connection? I mean, being from California, did you have any family connection to the business or anything?
No, nothing at all. No, my dad was a draftsman and my mom worked like as a receptionist, basically. I had no connection whatsoever. I actually didn't even hear of Juilliard until I was in high school. And I remember there was a kid named Michael Hisendorf, and he was like a real actor. I grew up in Orange County, which is about an hour from L.A., and he would go up and do commercials and do bit parts in movies and stuff. And so, you know, I was like, oh, wow, you're really doing it. And he was like, well, I'm going to apply and try to go to Juilliard. And I said, what is that? He goes, well, it's an acting school. And I was like, there's schools for acting? I mean, it was that naive. He was like, yeah, dude, the Robin Williams, Kevin Klein. I was like, what? They went there? He's like, yeah. I was like, blown away. And then I went, because I was a terrible student and I knew I wasn't going to go to college. No one in my family had gone to college. And then I, you know, went down the rabbit hole of like, wait a minute, I can go to school for acting. And so a friend of mine went to the American Conservatory Theater. They had a summer training congress the summer before my senior year. He was a year ahead of me, a guy named Craig Brewer, who went on to be a writer director of Hustle and Flow and Black Snake Moan and Dolomite Is My Name.
Right.
Another one. Anyway, he's been very successful, but he was an actor when we were in school and he went and I was like, I'm going to go there. So my whole senior year was all about going to ACT summer program. And then once I did that, I wanted to go to the grad program, but they wouldn't let you in. And for 2 years, you had to have 2 years of college. So I went to junior college for 2 years. And I was like, I'm going to do as many plays as I can do here and I'll do, you know, take some classes and then I'll apply for ACT. And then I figured, well, if I'm applying there, I might as well apply to all these other schools that I want to go to. And Juilliard was at the top of the list and NYU and Harvard had a program. And so I went up and auditioned for Juilliard and Harvard the same weekend. They did it like in San Francisco. And then that Monday, I got a call from Juilliard saying, hey, we'd like to offer you a spot. And that was like my top choice. So I was like, what? Yeah, of course. So I didn't even do the other auditions. And
that's awesome.
I ended up getting into the Harvard program as well. And I was like, thanks, guys, but I'm going to go here instead. And they're like, good for you. Have fun.
Oh, that's incredible. So you moved to New York.
I did. Yeah. Moved to New York in 93. Yeah, I had no idea what I was getting into. I mean, like I said, no one in my family went to college. So my idea of college was Dead Poets Society. I was like, I didn't know what New York City was like or what a campus was going to be like. And I walk into Lincoln Center and I'm like, oh, well, this is interesting. I mean, this is all before the internet where you could just look everything up. This is before. Right. It's like, here's a pamphlet. Here's a couple pictures of what the inside of our school looks like. But like, you have no idea. Right. Yeah, it was definitely not Dead Poets Society. There was no beautiful, what was that? Princeton, I think they shot that or something.
Yeah. Beautiful campus. Right. At this point, were you interested in film and television? I mean, you referenced your friend who was going and doing commercials and stuff, or for you, was it theater?
You know, it was theater was everything. I mean, I remember when I was in junior college and having a conversation with a buddy of mine, this guy, Todd Kolzek, who we were doing Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Just a terrific.
Sure.
And I was like, yeah, I just want to do theater and stuff. He's like, what are you talking about, dude? Why don't you go try to do film and TV? I don't know. And I remember one of my teachers, I was like reading this play and he was like, what are you reading? And I'm like, oh, it's this new play. It just came out in New York. And he goes, oh, okay. You need to read more books. I go, what do you mean? He goes, why are you reading a play that somebody else already did? Why don't you read a book so you can do the original version of it, you know, and some movie or something? And I was like, wow, okay. I think these people have a lot more faith in me than I have in myself. And those conversations did start sparking, like, well, maybe I'll go and give it a shot. And then I went to New York, went to school, which was a grind. And I saw all these really talented people come out and just get beat up. And I went and did a summer Shakespeare festival in Utah. And there was a guy who had come out of another grad program a few years before us. And he had spent, I don't know, 5-10 years out of grad school doing theater. And he was just then going to go to LA and try to break in. And he was so impassioned about it. He was like, don't wait. Don't wait. I go, what? He goes, there's one time when you come out of school where they're all interested in you. I wish I would have capitalized on it when I had the shot, and I didn't. And now I'm starting from the ground up again. And it's going to be brutal. And if you get out of school and there's interest, get on a plane and go to LA. And so that was like the summer before my senior year. And so my buddy who was also at Utah, who was at graduating from Yale School of Drama, he had already done the New York thing before he went to Yale. And so he was like, I'm going to LA. We should go together. And I'm like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? And I had family, you know, in Orange County, so it wasn't like that crazy to do, but I just thought I would at least spend a year in New York and like capitalize on all those theater connections and try to do some regional theater. And then I did one play right when I graduated in like Shakespeare by the Sea, I think it was. Shakespeare on the Sound. I don't even know. It's up in Rowhiton, Connecticut.
We did so many of these same summer things, by the way. That's actually, which we've never talked about. But anyway, you did one show.
I did one show. I was making like $250 a week. I couldn't even pay my rent. It was like.
That was good.
That was good. I was like, oh, I'm so excited to get that job finally. And I was like, this is terrible. This is not going to work. And so I remember July 15th, my buddy was like, hey, I've got to go to this wedding up in Oregon. You want to take a road trip? And I hadn't been home in over a year. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to come back and let's take that road trip. So I came back. Luckily, I had an agent that had a West Coast office.
Okay.
Come to find out afterwards that that doesn't mean anything. That she had a meeting with me and was like, hey, yeah, if you ever feel like coming out to LA, just let me know. She was like the owner of the company. And I was like, yeah, no, seriously, I'm probably going to do that. And she was like, oh, okay. But she told me later that she was like, you know what? We just say that to everybody when we're signing them. But like, we work as two separate offices. Like, if you didn't get anything, I would have sent you back. And I was like, really? Like, well, that's just such a lie. She's like, well, you know, what are you going to do?
Again, this is like before digital and not only text, but even email. I mean, this is like right when email is starting.
I had a pager.
That's you had a pager. Exactly.
I'd get a pager to say, hey, you got an audition. Call the pager number back and be like, what is it? And then I had to go to the office to print out the sides and print out the appointment sheet. But anyway, long story short, I came in and I booked my first audition, which was for ER. And at the time that was like the number one show on TV. And my agent was like, you should consider staying and And I said, all right. And my buddy was already here and he wanted to stay. He was like, let's get an apartment. So we got an apartment and I never went back. I mean, I went back, wow, God, 20 years later to work, but never, you know, to go live.
You were LA based.
I was LA based immediately. Yeah. Within a couple months of graduating from school. So,
and then, so you get this role on ER. And so things were just really easy from then on out, right? I mean, you just didn't...
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you never stop working. No, it was, it was a good first year and then a good second year. I got that movie, The Replacements, about a year after I graduated. And that was the one that was the big shocker when I'm doing that movie. And it's a, you know, one of those big studio films. And you think, oh, this is the life. This is, I'm just going to leave this set and I'm going to go to the next one. And then the next one and I'm on my way. And then I didn't work for a year. And I was like, oh no, this is really going to be tough. But, you know, you get little gigs here and there, a couple of little guest stars on TV shows and, you know, a voiceover, a commercial that, you know, it's just like someone told me a long time ago, you're like juggling, you know, all these different aspects of your career and, you got to have all of them going. And because when one of them's down, the other one hopefully is up and you just got to keep juggling them until something happens.
Right.
So I got lucky. Yeah. I, you know, was grateful.
So this British show called The Office comes out with Ricky Gervais. Now, did you watch the show when it first came up available?
So I had a buddy of mine from New York who we did Chautauqua Theater Festival, another summer stock. He called me and was like, David, you've got to watch the show. It's right up your alley. It's hilarious. And I hear they're doing an American version of it. You've got to get on it. And I was like, okay. And he never does that. He never did that with any, he's never done it since. So
you were like, done. Okay. I'll just get on it.
I was like, I'll make a call. And I did watch it. I was like, oh my God, this is genius. And I called my agent immediately. And my agent said, do you want to do that? And I go, what? They go, well, they're just looking for like improv comedians. And I go, I did improv at Juilliard. What do you talk? Just because I didn't go to UCB or whatever doesn't mean I can't do that or don't want to do that. And in his defense, at that point, that was like the third incarnation of a British TV comedy that was somewhat successful that they had brought over and they've bombed over and over and over again. And so he was just like, here it's going to be another one of those. And I said, just get me an appointment. And at that point, they'd already cast John and Jenna and all those guys. And so he called me back and he goes, oh, they have the part of Roy. Would you want to go in for that? It's a guest star. And I said, yeah, get me in. So I went in and gave my audition for all those guys, and which people can see on the internet. And they called back and gave me the job. So, you know, I'd done a bunch of movies at that point, a bunch of TV, but without a doubt, that's the thing that everything just shifted. It's like you get on the number one show, even though it wasn't number one right away, it took a long time, but you get on a show that everyone's talking about and all of a sudden doors open up and opportunities and talk about that big break. It's like, I had a lot of breaks along the way to get me there.
Sure.
And luckily I had more breaks afterwards, you know, like you got...
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May.
Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
I keep getting those breaks. Someone's got a smile on you somewhere to to keep it going, because it doesn't just keep happening, you know?
Right. Had you done much comedy at all, or no?
I'd done comedic movies.
Okay.
And all dramatic television.
Okay.
That was the irony. The second I did The Office, all of a sudden everybody wanted you to come do comedy. And I was like, great, I'm happy to do it. And then the thing, it drove me crazy. And I don't know if it happened to you too, but I'm sure it did. I would walk into these auditions and they would go, hey, just improv it like they do in The Office.
Right.
And I would go, no. I'm on The Office, so I can tell you for a fact, this isn't all improv. There's actually really amazing writers that are writing all these jokes, and they're throwing them at us. And you know what? They're even adding more jokes to it when we do another take. This isn't all just our genius that made that show work. Hello, guys. Like, I'm happy to do that for you, but if you want me to write your show, like, that's a different job title. But don't say like they do in The Office. There was improv for sure, but the majority of that was scripted. It really well scripted.
It's a hard time for hiring. So you need a hiring partner built for hard times. That's Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements, or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Offer valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them, with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
The Gangster Chronicles podcast is a weekly conversation that revolves around the underworld. From criminals and entertainers to victims of crime and law enforcement, we cover all facets of the game. Gangster Chronicles podcast doesn't glorify or promote illicit activities. We just discuss the ramifications and repercussions of these activities. Because after all, if you play gangster games, you are ultimately rewarded with gangster prizes. Our Heart Radio is number one for podcasts, but don't take our word for it. Find the Gangster Chronicles podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you started working on the show, so you had seen the British version, you were a fan of that. and we start working on the pilot, what were your first impressions, either with working with people or on how things went during that pilot shoot? Because you had, well, way more experience than me, but more experience than a lot of the folks, right? So how was it to you? What were your first impressions?
Well, you know, I think I only have like that one scene in the pilot. I come in with a trash bag, which you don't know what is in that trash bag, whether it's a human head or something.
Right.
It was just, for some reason, the timing wasn't working. Something was off. And I remember Ken Kwapis was like, hey, let's take a break. And we went downstairs. And of course, I was panicking. I'm like, what happened? What did I do? You know? And John was like, no, man, they're doing this all the time. They're like, we're constantly taking breaks to just clear the air and then come back at it. And I think a big part of that is because, you know, we had a, those of us who had seen the show, it's hard not to have that impression, you know, and when you start imitating somebody else, you know, as well as I do, you're in trouble because you're never going to do it as good as the person who did it originally. So you've got to do your own thing and you got to find your own voice in it. So I don't know if that had something to do with it or what, or it just happened to be, you know, hey, let's just shake it up. And so we went downstairs, came back up and did like one more take and he was like, great, we got it. And I was like, oh, that was easy. And then it was, you know, a year later before we started filming. You know, it was like we had to wait to get picked up and then wait and wait. It was like, actually, no, we shot that stuff.
It was in the fall.
It was a year later that it aired. It wasn't until like April or whatever that we found out how the show would turn out.
Right. Jenna had a conversation with me about backstory. She had a journal about your relationship, I mean, the relationship between Pam and Roy and her history. Did you work with her on your initial backstory or were you involved with that at all?
I was receptive to her ideas. It was her show more than it was my show. I was just a guest star on it, but we did talk about it. You know, with all of those things, it's so important to create a backstory, but yeah, we did have to go, how long have we been together? And, you know, when did we start dating and how did it, you know, we did share those conversations. And I don't know that too much of what I said shifted anything. I was just more amenable to her ideas. You know, I was like, yeah, I think that's probably right. I think they probably kind of fell into this thing and then they kind of got into a rut and just kept going along. And, you know, clearly they weren't happy in the relationship, or at least Roy wasn't happy enough to propose. And then, you know, the fun thing about that show was those talking heads where you could hear characters' inner thoughts, you know? And so often in television, the characters don't evolve. They want the same thing every week and they want to see that dynamic and how it plays out, but they don't see a character make a shift or a change. And so I was lucky enough to have this like, oh no, Roy's going to lose her, try to win her back. And it was like this different character to play in season three. And that was really fun to do. And then when I found out that he didn't ever really truly evolve, by the end of it, you were like, oh no, the old Roy's back. And then they nicely gave me a great little send off in the, you know, final season of the evolved Roy or whatever, which was cool.
Right. You talk about how trying to imitate somebody else's performance, right? So it was Lee in the British version. Did you feel like pretty quickly, you know, the character of Roy evolved from that original British version or became more tied to you and your sensibilities?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, there's also that British, the reserve, you know, like that guy could be just stoic and just and didn't say much. That Lee character was kind of like that. And they gave me more things to do, more funnier things to say and be a more of a meathead, you know. And, you know, I went to high school with a bunch of meatheads and a lot of them I didn't like. So this was my opportunity to make fun of them. I got to carry that with me for the rest of my life, you know. But yeah, I mean, it was they did write to that. I think also the whole show just sort of evolved after those first six episodes. It got its own voice when they didn't have those scripts to go to, and they had to write for us, and they did, you know.
I mean, I'm sure you're at least aware, you know, that there has been a lot of sympathy toward Roy actually and his plight. You know, for a long time. What would you call it? Emotional cheating, that she wanted to be with someone else? My question is that, was that a conscious decision? I mean, I guess talk a little bit about the importance of bringing that humanity to Roy, which gave him a depth that maybe on other shows wouldn't have existed.
Well, I got to say, you know, that was Greg Daniels. We had a conversation between season 2 and 3, and he said, I want to make Roy more of a rival to Jim. And I said, I don't know how we're going to do that, because he's pretty much a meathead, and we've pretty much painted him into a corner that I don't know how anyone would ever want to be with this guy. And he laughed and said, well, I think we can, and I know that you can as an actor, and we're going to write towards it. We're going to try to make it happen. And I said, look, in my opinion, the only way that there's a chance at that is if Roy is able to realize he's screwed up and try to make amends or make it better somehow. And then you might have a shot of rooting for him. Unless he does that, I don't know how you can, because he's so thick-headed. And he said, yeah, I agree with that. And that's what I was thinking. And I said, okay, cool. And then we had it like in the season 3, like first episode, there's a talking head of the wedding has been called off. And he just has this one moment where he says, I got to win her back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely a conscious effort of, you know, this guy was, you don't realize how much you miss something until they're gone. And, but at the same token, like, I don't necessarily know that they were the right match for each other. I think it's also like you're going to lose that thing, and so you don't want to lose it. And so,
right,
you know, he was definitely in the doghouse trying to win her back. And you know, there were moments that they got to where you're like, oh, maybe this is going to happen. Like maybe they'll push it off for another couple seasons of them getting together. But no, it was the season 3 arc.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's funny. I always say, like, because early on, man, I get a lot of hate on social media. You're such a jerk. I hate you. But I would always say, just please, everyone, don't ever forget that Pam cheated on Roy. Like, he may have been a numbskull, right, and not a great boyfriend, but come on. Like, Roy isn't the guy that was doing that.
Do you think Roy never cheated?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I never thought about it, but I never did on camera.
You never did on camera. That's
so right. We don't know what that character did. I think Roy probably cheated on her early on in their relationship. I would guess. He just treated her so poorly.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't really have much respect for her. And I think it was probably when she called it off that all of a sudden he did have respect for her. And then it was like, oh, okay.
Right. So in Booze Cruise, I mean, it occurs to me as you're talking that it feels like really about you sensing something between Jim and Pam and just wanting to stop it as opposed to really wanting to be with her. Is that how you viewed it? Did you talk to Greg about it at all?
No, I didn't. We didn't talk about it, but it felt that way. And when we shot it, and that right. It was a rivalry. It was also, I have to do this, you know, and you saw them flirting with each other and just blurted it out. So yeah, we didn't really talk about it, but yeah, I think that's fair to say that he was more interested in shutting that down than really being so madly in love with Pam. I don't think that was the case.
Right.
And also he had quite a few drinks, you know, and was like festive and like, all right, let's just do this thing, you know, like,
let's just do it. We could deal with the ramifications later.
I'm sure he woke up the next morning and was like, oh no, we did. So boy, what did we do?
There's fan theories. Do you think Roy ever cheated on Pam with Angela?
No. Definitely did not. You know, I don't even think he knew Angela's name. I really don't. I don't think he was, it was that invested, but I haven't watched them back since we originally did them. So maybe there's a lot more in there that they edited in.
Yeah. Well, but there's also a fan theory that Kevin is a secret genius who embezzled millions of dollars from Dunder Mifflin and he knew what was going on the whole time.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May.
Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Time. So
those are fun theories.
It's certainly possible that they know more than I do. I do have to ask you about this. It has become, I guess, one of my favorite stories in life. But right around this time, mid season 2, Steve gets nominated for a Golden Globe Award. And do you remember that we met at my house and you drove us to, you drove a group of us to the Beverly Hilton in, my recollection is, a Honda Civic. And we showed up like the Beverly Hillbillies to the Beverly Hilton for the Golden Globes, where we were on the rooftop, not allowed in the actual room. And we drove up and they were like, you morons, like, there's no valet. This is a red carpet and we're not taking your car. And you were like, no problem, guys, I'll go park. And you, like, had to park miles away and walk back. Do you remember this story?
I swear to you, I do not.
Oh, my God.
But I'm not surprised.
That is an awful answer.
I don't. I wish I remembered that. I remembered us being upstairs at that party, having quite a few drinks. And when Steve won, like, it was like, we won the Super Bowl, like, so pumped and so excited for him and the show. But now that you're saying it, I'm putting it all together, like, literally right now. And I do remember being at your house. I'm sure I did. And I had, God, I had an old beat up Honda.
It was a Honda Civic.
Was it a Accord?
Okay, maybe it was a Accord.
Civic or Accord. Okay. It was a 4-door. It was old and beat up, though. I mean, it was my old agent's old car. My car broke down and I needed a car. I said, can I borrow your car? And she was like, okay. Yeah. Just pay me back when you can. I'm like, well, I need a job. And she was like, okay. Like, I was driving her car around for a couple of months before I had enough money to pay it off. It was only like $2,500 or something, right? But it was like, it was an old beat up car.
So we pulled up like along the side of Wilshire Boulevard. And you were like, yeah, you guys get out. I'll go park.
Who all was in the car with us?
Oscar and Angela, at least. I can't fully remember.
That's amazing.
It's become one of my favorite memories of the time. And that line, I wish we knew we were in the good old days while they were happening. Because that, for me, yeah, it just kind of, just the purity of that. No limo. Yeah. No red carpet. I don't even know that we were invited on the red carpet. We may have kind of walked through and people were like, who are they? You're not allowed in the room.
Nobody knew we were. I was surprised that we even got the invite to the NBC party on the roof.
That's about right.
You know, but so many of those parties, like, early on, shortly after that, we did get, like,
yes,
cars to go to, like, the SAG Awards and, yes, things like that. Right?
Yes. No, yes, we did.
I don't remember ever driving to another one of those parties.
No, that was it. That was it, I think. That was it.
I do remember we went to the SAG Awards, I think it was the year later, maybe, and we partied so hard. It was like we thought that that party was, for us, like, that open bar. We were like, oh my God, this is amazing. And everyone's looking at us like, oh my God, you guys. And we're dancing. We took over the dance floor, and, like, it was so much fun. And now when I go to those parties, I always see those, like, first year shows, and those kids doing the same thing. I'm not doing that anymore because now I know it's a work party. Have a drink, say hello to everybody, and, you know, and keep your head down. But like, yeah, that innocence of us was pretty palpable, and everyone was smiling and having a good time with us.
Yeah.
On the latest season of the Next Question with Katie Couric podcast, Katie dives into, well, Katie. Hear exclusive podcast-only conversations between Katie and the people who made her memoir, Going There, possible.
We spent a lot of time together around a dining room table here and in the city, and, you know, it was a very intense experience.
All episodes of Next Question with Katie Couric are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
I'm Colleen Witt. Join me, the host of Eating While Broke podcast, while I eat a meal created by self-made entrepreneurs, influencers, and celebrities over a meal they once ate when they were broke.
Today, I have the lovely AJ Crimson, the official princess of Compton, Asia,
Kid Ink, and Asia.
This is the professor. We're here on Eating While Broke, and today I'm going to break down my meal that got me through a time when I was broke.
Listen to Eating While Broke on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What was it like coming back to the show when you would be gone for a bit and then you would come back?
Well, those early days, because I wasn't in every episode, you guys were so stir crazy, like stuck in that room. The same faces to look at for 12 hours a day, all day long. So when I would come in, you guys were so like, hey, David, oh my God, there's another person here. And you guys were so excited to see me. It was so much fun. It was hilarious. Yeah, you know, that show evolved over time and everybody's evolved with it. And everyone's kind of star broke out in different ways and different things. And it was a different show. It was a different show those later years. Everyone was still very nice, but you were there.
We weren't driving to an award ceremony in your beat up Honda Civic Accord.
Everyone, yeah, I remember that. Like, what was it? Season 3. All of a sudden, everyone pulls up in new cars, and you're like, it was like, oh, all right. I guess maybe the show's going to be around a little bit. Yeah,
yeah. Did you have any conversations with Greg when you agreed to come back with your new fiance? And you invite Jim and Pam to your wedding. Did you have any conversations with Greg about what you wanted in terms of resolution to the character?
No, that was all them. I mean, I did come to find out like that John was always sort of pitching to try to get me around, stir up some of that conflict that they had those early years. That was fun stuff for us to play. But no, I mean, you know, I did that one episode in 5, and then they brought me in for the Threat Level Midnight or something.
Threat Level Midnight, yes.
And they cut me out of that episode, so I'm only in the extras of that. And then they called me. That was the crazy one, was that Jim and Pam's wedding. They called me with that crazy pitch that now is out there. I was shooting a movie up in Maine, and they were like, can you come in to do this Niagara Falls thing? And I was like, I don't know that I'll be able to. Like, we'd had to carve it out of the schedule. And so then they did carve it out. And the last second, they called and said, it's not happening. And I was like, oh, at all? And they're like, not happening. I said, oh, okay.
Ride in on a horse.
Riding in on a horse in the middle of the wet. I mean, it was so crazy. I'm so glad somebody stepped in and was like, guys, I think we're jumping the shark here. This is a little bit too much. It did not feel at all like what Roy would have done either when I was being pitched it or told it. But I didn't have any say in that at all. But I was so grateful that they pivoted at the end. And I thought that episode was a beautiful episode. And I loved how it ended. And sometimes people get locked into an idea and they think that's the best thing. And then And then when they're forced to pivot on something, all of a sudden something even more beautiful comes out of it that you don't anticipate often. And I think that's a perfect example of an episode that turned out that way.
Yeah. Well, it's so crazy because I think that bond of our early times, we got so close. Like,
yeah.
You know, even when you would leave for a while, we may have jumped to you because we wanted somebody else to look at. But exactly. It was never like, oh, that guy is back. Like, you were always a part of the ensemble. I'm sure that has to do with how the show started and what we were born out of.
I've always felt that way. I couldn't agree more. People's excitement was nothing about like anything other than a new face to look at and talk to and be like, what have you been up to? But we did all bond, even for me, who was not in all of the episodes, but those early years, I remember so much just hanging out and playing video games and the trailers and a big part of that too is who was steering the ship of Steve, you know, he was the most humble guy and here he was. By the time we shot the pilot and by the time it aired that second season, one of the biggest movie stars around at that
moment.
On
the planet.
And he was still the same guy. Humble, down to earth, excited about the same things, creatively, would listen to you, it was just like, and that's, he's still that guy today. I mean, I remember, I just ran into him, not just, but right before COVID, we were in the parking lot. We talked for like an hour. Like, and it was just like no time had passed between the last time I saw him and then. And I've been in a lot of shows with a lot of people and people as famous as he is. And that is not always the case at all. He's a special human. And I always say he's my favorite actor I've ever worked with and been around.
Yeah.
Because as talented as he is, he's just that nice as a human being.
Yeah. Basically every single person that I've talked to over the last couple of years have said exactly the same thing. Kind of just doesn't get any better in terms of his talent or just his decency as a person. Had a tremendous impact on not just the show, but all of us individually.
And it's hard to put that into words with other shows and people have asked, and I can't put my finger on it other than just being a professional, always showing up on time, doing his job, and always making everyone's day better.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is. He always showed up. He always worked as hard as he possibly could and was working harder than anyone else and was still decent and kind to everyone that he interacted with forever. And, you know, he taught me a really important lesson. Him and, I mean, it's like it's name drop central, but Robin Williams as well. This sort of mantra of it takes just as much energy to be nice than it does to be an ass. I mean, it's kind of as simple as that. Do your job and do it excellently. And at the same time, be kind to everyone around you.
Yeah. Seems so simple, but it isn't always the case, you know?
I know. So after The Office, you've been busy continuing to work hard and return to some drama. I want to just for a few minutes, because this is selfish. I loved your performance and the show, Mayor of Easttown. So congratulations on that show. How was that to work on for you?
Just as lovely as you could imagine. Kate is as great as Steve is. Kate's equal par as a human being and as an actress. She's just so down to earth and so great. Yeah, all of those things, you know, I just said about Steve, just take them and dump them right on over to Kate. The thing that was great from talking about background and all that stuff that Jenna was doing with her character from the get-go, you know, we had to do all that stuff with our characters because we had 20 plus years of a relationship and a lot of stuff that had gone down that we had to know and had to figure out. And so, you know, that was our rehearsal. That's all we did. We got together and we just talked with her and I and Gene Smart and Gowrie, with the writer and the director, and just flushing out all of that history, because you have to have that history to play that subtext. And if we're not both thinking about the same thing, when she's saying our grandson is blinking again, if we both don't know that's the same thing that our son did, if you don't have that history, you can't play that moment. So we got to do all of that stuff. And it was a crazy experience just in the sense of, we had to get shut down for COVID for 6 months and then come back. And then I had more hair at the beginning of the season than I did at the end, but we shot it all together. And, you know, it's like stuff like that where you're like, God, this took a lot longer than anyone anticipated.
Right.
Kate was so, so specific about detail and, you know, like she would do these things and it's like most people wouldn't, you know, wouldn't appreciate it. But as an actor, I'm watching her and I'm just going, oh my God, I can't believe she's doing that. And it.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's all behavior stuff. Like she grabs a Cheez-It and she puts the cheese whiz on. And I remember, and I just watched her in the moment when we did the rehearsal. She goes, I need what's that cheese spread stuff? Like, I need that. I want to put it like on a Cheez-It or something. And they were like, okay, let's find some cheese whiz. And it, I mean, she must've done 20 takes of that, pouring it on and eating it. They never saw her eat it. Like it cuts right before. And I was like, no, she almost puked that day just to get that bit. And you didn't even use it. Her mind worked, you know, in such creative ways of really digging into that character. And she spent a lot of time with, you know, detectives and being in that area. I got to listen to accents of people in that region. And it was an amazing experience. It was great. It was all the stuff you hope it would be when you sign on to do one of those.
Yeah. You talked about behavior, because we've talked about that quite a bit, that character behavior was so much a basis of what The Office was. And I think it's really about the characters and those behaviors and not painting the quote unquote bad guys as bad guys or the idiots as just idiots, that there's a complexity and a depth to the character that is so vitally important.
I agree with that sentiment about The Office. I just love that type of comedy too, that's grounded in reality, but makes you so uncomfortable that you have to laugh, or some people can't take it. I have friends that would be like, I can't watch that stuff. It's just too, it's so uncomfortable when he says those things. And I just eat that up, but it's grounded in reality and behavior.
And it's about also character development, and obviously a huge journey and arc with Roy, but so much of the work that you have done over the years, that attention to detail and character is there throughout. And I admire you so much as an actor and, you know, want you to know how our, even if you don't fully remember our Honda car ride, those early days and the time that we shared and getting to watch you work was always such a pleasure for me. So thank you, David, so much for your work and for joining us today. I appreciate you so much.
Well, right back at you. I've always been a fan and I'm excited for you to be doing these deep dives. I mean, like, it's crazy how long this thing has lasted. It's a beautiful thing. I'm grateful for it. It's crazy.
It is. I'll close by asking you then, why do you think that this show is bigger now than it ever was when we were shooting?
Oh, boy. I mean, I would just go back to something Steve said when we first started doing it. And he was like, this is not going to be everyone's cup of tea. We have to let people find this show. If we try to make it like what's already out there, then it's not going to work. We have to do our own thing with it. They had done office comedies before and they'll do them again in the future. But ours was unique at the time. You know, reality TV was... had been in our universe, so that we could use that format that I don't think anyone had really used that format. That I think that's unique about it. And frankly, because you have streaming, no one is going to try to do this right now, because why would you? If you could just go watch The Office, you're not going to try to do the same thing. So I think this is going to last. It's going to continue to last, I think. And so many people go back to this like a comfort food. It's like me putting on SportsCenter. I listen to that and I can just relax. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, David, so much. Thanks for coming on.
No problem, brother. Good to see you again.
David You're the best. I enjoyed that so much. You are an actor's actor, and I, for one, am fascinated by you and all of the characters you have created with such intelligence, depth, and sincerity. So thank you so much. And for talking all about Roy, who I dare say is one of the most overlooked characters on The Office. Thank you for joining me, my friend. It was indeed my pleasure. The rest of you, well, I'll see you soon for new episodes in the Brian Baumgartner podcast machine. Is that a thing? I don't know. But anyway, I'll see you next week for another episode of The Office Deep Dive. Until then, be very, very well, my friends. The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Li. Our producers are Emily Carr and Diego Tapia, and our intern is Hannah Harris. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend Creed Bratton, and the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
Attention, we need everything you got fast. Waiting on reparations, we be the illest podcast.
Tune in every Thursday, politics and wordplay. We fight for the people cause they got us in the worst way.
From the hill to Brazil, Bombay to Kanye.
From the left enclave to what the neocons say.
Every Thursday, cop the heady conversation.
And break us off with some bread cause we waiting on reparations.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Elizabeth, you're the co-host of that new podcast, Ridiculous Crime.
Why, yes, I am.
You know what's ridiculous?
Yeah, carpeting in kitchens and bathrooms.
Oh, wow, you are good. But you know what's also ridiculous? A 16-year-old who breaks into a car dealership and steals Guy Fieri's Lamborghini.
What?
Yes, to impress a girl. I'll tell you all about it on Ridiculous Crime, our podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free.
And 100% ridiculous. Listen to Ridiculous Crime on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Colleen Witt. Join me, the host of Eating While Broke podcast, while I eat a meal created by self-made entrepreneurs, influencers, and celebrities over a meal they once ate when they were broke.
Today, I have the lovely AJ Crimson,
the official princess of Compton, Asia,
Kid Ink, and Asia.
This is the professor. We're here on Eating While Broke, and today I'm going to break down my meal that got me through a time when I was broke.
Listen to Eating While Broke on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gangster Chronicles podcast is a weekly conversation that revolves around the underworld. From criminals and entertainers to victims of crime and law enforcement, we cover all facets of the game. Gangster Chronicles podcast doesn't glorify or promote illicit activities. We just discuss the ramifications and repercussions of these activities because, after all, if you play gangster games, you are ultimately rewarded with gangster prizes. Our Heart Radio is number one for podcasts, but don't take our word for it. Find the Gangster Chronicles podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit nfl.com/schedule-release to learn more.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.